Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai. With me is Brother Hari from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. We're going through the 1991 Summer Course series. Those of you regular followers of our program will know. The sixth discourse in that series is what we are going through right now. The discourse is on the Prashnopanishad. This entire series has been on Upanishads and the Vedantic approach. We've started this discourse about a couple of weeks back. We played a few clips. We'll continue with that. But before we do that, as always, we offer our loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And I invite Hari to join all of us. Saram Hari.
Saram, good evening, Prem.
Even as I was going through this part, I think last week we played a very, very profound clip. As we were closing last week, you know, Swami was talking about the correlation between energy and matter. And Swami was drawing that example of how everything literally originates from the sun.
Right.
I think in response to the question about what is the source of all human life.
Yeah, so this is the first of six questions which the students are asking the sage Pipalada. So the first question is like, how do, from, I mean, whence do living beings come from?
Right.
Like, how do they arise? So in their quest for the truth about Brahman, or the truth about the Atman, the first question that out of curiosity they ask this, like, so where do the beings originate from?
Right.
So in answer to that, the in the Prashnopanishad it said that the sage replies that it is Prajapati who then he, you know, he creates both matter and energy. Rai, he says Rai and Prana. Rai is matter and Prana is energy. So through the interplay of these two forces arises the you know, the world.
Right.
The world of matter as well as energy.
Right.
Which kind of mimics, as we were mentioning last time, no, the present theories of cosmology are kind of parallel to that. So as we reviewed the, you know, first few seconds after the Big Bang, there's only energy, and that coalesces into matter. The, you know, there's only, as they say, gluons and the, you know, quarks, right, to begin with. And then after that, it slowly becomes, you know, the other particles, the heavier particles.
There was this discourse, I think the second discourse, where Swami, it's a very, very beautiful discourse on the Vedic heritage, where Swami is talking about the evolution of the human intellect.
Right.
You know, looking at the various factors around. And in that, Swami mentioned that one of the first things was man's observation of the correlation between darkness and light to the activities of their life. Swami is saying that, you know, the only thing which he had to observe was himself, the early man, right? Early man or woman, both together, where he was looking at himself and he was seeing that when it goes dark, my energy dips and I go to sleep. When it is bright, I'm more active to do work. And so he says that there is a direct correlation between darkness, light and my life. And then he says that whenever it is bright, you see this sun, which is, seems to be the solitary object in the sky, which is so bright. So then he goes on to say that there is some correlation between sun and, you know, our life. And then Swami says that he reads the correlation between the sun's movement and the seasons and the growth of crop. And very beautifully, and in fact, that is the discourse where Swami later says how the different appellations of God comes. You know, Vishnu or Brahma, the various names, Vishveshwara and all of that. It's very interesting to see it, because even today we were making a reference to an analogy which Swami was giving in a discourse. Swami says, you know, those days this child marriage was very rampant. So let's say a lady got married to a husband who was 10 year old and she was 8 year old. And this was very common those days. You know, we had all these diseases which were very common, and there was not much cure for them. So let's say that this young boy died at the age of 11 or so. Okay. So this girl is widowed at a very young age, and she decides not to marry again. So at the age of 80, somebody comes and asks you, you know, how did your husband look? Okay. And she produces a photograph of a 10-year-old boy, right? And Swami goes on to say that that will look very weird for you, because here is an 80-year-old lady who's so wrinkled and, you know, worn out by age, and she's showing a picture of a 10-year-old boy and saying that this is my husband. So Swami is saying that, see, you cannot relate to that answer unless you go back in time and imagine this lady who is standing in front of you as an 8-year-old girl. And then you will be able to relate that, okay, this is a child marriage and this is what would have happened. Swami said, same is the case with many of the scriptures too. You will not be able to understand the relevance and the essence of this if you are not able to travel in time and put it in the context of the time in which it was produced. So I think it's very important, especially when you're looking at Upanishads and the Vedic approach itself, to one thing keep in mind, that there was no I don't think there was this idea of a deity or God as such. Though today we are looking at it and saying that sun god, we are looking at rain and saying that Varuna, or any of those appellations we give it, and the moment we talk of it, we imagine a person in our mind. But it probably was not the case when these people
to begin with.
They designated these names. For they might have just given it to a process.
Like a force of nature, or a process.
And they must have really been very, very open to all the observations they made. And I think that's what we were talking last time. It was.
But at the same time, I think when you have to relate it to people, or people want to relate to these concepts, I think innately they draw these pictures, or they create a story or a myth or a person around it. So that's how they can relate to it. That's the beauty of Hindu religion. That you can cover the spectrum.
Exactly.
From as you're speaking now, we speak of it abstractly as a force of nature, like sun is a force of nature. But then there's equally rich mythology around the sun god.
Right.
So many stories and legends built around the sun god. He makes his appearances in the Mahabharata, in the Ramayana, everywhere. So, that is the entire spectrum that we have in this religion.
Exactly. I mean, when you look at even the conversation between the disciples, that is what is coming out. They're absolutely not fixated with the idea that it must be a god who is manufacturing and, handling this whole thing.
Yes.
In fact, I was reading an article where they say that It was nothing but a very theoretical approach to understanding nature. They said there must be somebody who is creating. May not be somebody. There's some force which is creating, some force which is sustaining, and some force which is leading to the dissolution of matter.
That's true.
So, as you're saying that, over a period of time, a form was attributed to each one of these, processes.
Yeah.
And that form started giving forth legends and stories to it.
Yeah.
And the whole idea was to understand it better.
Exactly, yes. Even the story is the underlying theme is something which comes from the Vedas, from the Upanishads. But it's just that, if I had to relate the whole thing, say, to a child.
Right.
Or let's say that the sage has intuited something. And at that time, the only way perhaps he could relate it to somebody was through the form of a story.
Exactly.
And that's what has carried down as tradition. Right.
So, and the other thing which, towards the end of that clip, what Swami says is, the explanation which the Guru gives is, what's important is to be able to ask that question.
Yeah.
What is the goal of life? How many people, the word which Swami uses, Paramavadi, the Jeevana Paramavadi, one in 100 crore or one in a crore, Swami says, get this thought of what is the purpose of life. And I think even fewer pursue it after having got that thought.
Exactly.
I think in a way you can say that it's becoming rarer now. Because when I look at it, 15, 20 years earlier, let's say you're making even 1 lakh per month. The amount of variety which was there to spend on was much lesser. Right? I think you reach that state of boredom a little faster and then start wondering, what is the purpose of life? Now you are so many gradations in spending. When we were in school, there were only 3 models of cars you could buy. Right? You either buy a Maruti or a Fiat or something like that. But now you have so many layers of upgradation that I think that boredom will take much longer to set in.
But at the same time, at my age, so I am around 37, 38. So when I look at many of my classmates, especially like those from engineering, and who are presently settled in so many different jobs, like so some are in Google Finance and one is in Bloomberg and so many, you know, like highly placed already, because obviously they started at a high position and evolved over the years, right? So I can, you know, the last time I met them a couple of months back, and the conversation mainly centered around the amount of stress that they were undergoing and how, you know, it's called the mid-age and the middle-age crisis. So they've come to that stage where they're really asking themselves, like, what I'm doing worthwhile? You know, so obviously when you're at a young age, all of these hold a lot of, you know, attraction, that the promotions, the increments, right?
I think that is another feature of it. Mm. What probably our forefathers, grandfathers, and fathers reached at the age of 60.
Exactly.
In terms of attainments.
Financial security.
And financial security seems to be coming,
much
as
earlier, far earlier.
In the
and they're already itself. Beginning to question, you know. So one of my friends is already asking me, how can I establish an orphanage? I want to be able to give the gift of education to very poor children who cannot afford it at all. So he's asking me, how do I go about creating an orphanage? And yet another is asking me, like, the stress is killing me. You know, like, I want to be out of this job in 5 years and maybe go in for some meditation, something. So I'm seeing actually more and more people are really asking the same question called, what meaning does life hold? Or my life, what meaning does it hold? What is the right purpose? In fact, a few weeks ago, I was giving a talk in a satsang hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam, and a very young boy, he's just stepping into his engineering career, and he had this question. Like, he's saying, like, at this stage itself, I want to know, I want to be able to shape my life such that, as Swami said, that I should lead a life of purpose. So what kind of purpose should I create for myself in life? And I think that is very important, very vital for every youngster to answer. That's a very wise, you know, course of
question
action.
To ask, right?
Very wise question to ask.
But we're wondering what's the answer you give.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's actually the purpose of life. You know, there is no one single purpose to life.
Right.
We all imagine that it's out there somewhere. But it is something that we each one has to create. But there are certain guidelines, definitely, that the purpose cannot be limited to something like, I want to make money, or I want to achieve fame, I want to get power. And the reason is very simple. A, as you said, right now they could get exhausted pretty quickly. You might get there so fast, A. The B is that even when you get to a certain level, you're always gnawed by that feeling. The feeling always gnaws at you, saying that I don't have enough. See, that is a thought in the mind that nothing can cure. You know, there's this, you know, in the Beatles, there's this musician, Paul McCartney.
McCartney, right.
And, you know, he was somebody obviously who had made millions through a very successful career. But he said that very often, like early in the morning, he would wake up in sweating, you know, with the thought that he suddenly has nothing with him, that he doesn't have any money with him. You know, that was his greatest fear, that one day he would wake up with nothing to his name, like zero in his bank balance. So imagine that this is a person who is like maybe in the 1%, you know, wealthy in the world, wealthy people in the world. But then he was still having that gnawing fear that one day all this will go. Right? So there is no such thing as, we imagine there's something called financial security to be attained by having a huge bank balance. But imagine that this person is still, he's troubled by the thought, agitated by the thought that it may all end. Right? It doesn't come. So what we are chasing is either a very small goal, or a goal like it may be like a well that we can never be able to fill. Like admiration. You know, like one person was telling me this. So he's like a coach, you know, personal coach, and also does these programs, you know, training and leadership programs. So he was telling me what he had noticed in himself. He says that actually he can do an excellent job in delivering, say, a seminar, right? And he knows that he can prepare well. He's a very good orator, and he can hold the audience's attention, rapt attention, for 4 hours. And at the end of 4 hours, he knows that the entire audience is going to stand up and give him a standing ovation for 10 minutes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. He's going to do such an excellent job, and he's had this happen over and over again. And he knows that when that even as he stands there and he's, you know, absorbing all that admiration, all the attention, he knows 10 minutes later, when he gets back into his car, he's still going to have the feeling that he's not being admired enough.
Mm-hmm.
So even that high point, right, you could imagine like a room, say like about 400, 500 people applauding you for an excellent job.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 minutes later, you're still left with the feeling that I have not been admired enough.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what, you know, there is, as you're saying, there is no one answer you can think of for yourself or for others.
Yeah.
But as Swami would say, that just be on the lookout, just be aware that, you know, to start with, where it will not be found, you know,
exactly.
rather than where it will be found. Because many students would share their experience this way.
Mm.
You know, when you come as a devotee, you come and sit in the darshan lounge, you know, you have to wake up at unearthly hours, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Come and sit in the lines, and then still there is no guarantee that you will be anywhere near, you know, Swami's path.
Mm.
So these boys will tell that, you know, I should just get that seat in that Swami's university and become Swami's student, then I'll be out of this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, then you achieve that, and then you realize that this doesn't guarantee you much.
Yeah.
You know, for a month or two you're floating, and after that you realize that probably the bhajan singer seems to be getting more attention.
Mm.
Then you try to get in there, and then you find that even among bhajan singers, those who get picked for koda, you get more attention.
Mm.
And then you know, however close you go to Swami, you realize that something is lacking.
Yes.
You know, many people, I feel, we fail to acknowledge this.
Mm. Mm.
And Swami would say this, even my robe is not as close to me as you think it is, right? So you realize that when you go closer to Swami, that you, even with something like being with an avatar, you realize that unless you look within, you're not looking at the right place.
Right.
So whether it is in absolutely material sense in the world outside, in the corporate world, or even in the spiritual world, because that's a trapping which we all get into. You know, this admiration, that's not confined only to probably somebody like who's giving a talk outside, or you know, who's a big businessman or something. Even in the spiritual field, you have this
very much,
there, right? So unless you go within, and that's the beauty of stories like, you know, Gautama Buddha.
Hmm.
If you look at it, we are talking about somebody who's trying to reach the highest, this one, but he came from there.
Hmm.
You know, when looking at it from his point of view, he had everything that you could ask for, but he felt that there is no way, with everything that he had, he could remove the pain of a person who is in front of him.
That's right.
And when that pain becomes yours, nothing that you have is going to remove that pain.
Exactly.
You know, once he started empathizing with the pain of the other person, he realized that no amount of wealth that he had is going to remove that pain.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it is. You know, I was telling this a couple of programs earlier too. There was a discourse I was going through where Swami was talking about this very thing. What is the purpose of life?
Mm.
I went through that entire discourse. Swami is asking this question, what is the purpose of life, probably 15, 16 times.
Yes.
And the answer is not very obvious.
There isn't,
Right.
Each one has to answer it for himself.
Right.
But as I was saying, the Swami has already shown the way in like so many different ways. And like one very good guideline is, Swami says, the journey from I to V to He.
Right.
Like expanding that circle. So usually, as I was saying, you know, the what our entire life, what are we catering to is the I, right? So at some point of time, if we wake up to the fact that there's a never ending and it's not a quest that's ever going to get completed.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the time when we look at expanding our circle to V,
right?
And Swami has shown, you know, if like, for example, say the hospital, when he sets up, like he's standing for that, I will, you know, create health for people who cannot afford it at all.
Right.
Or education, you know, a value-based education, right, which will create people who will transform society.
Mm.
You know, it's not the run-of-the-mill education system just to make money. You know, most of the education systems today are like that, which is why it creates the students the way they are. But here, you know, a person receives the benefit of something very extraordinary as a student, and goes out, and that extraordinariness is now available to the people around him, right? So Swami was standing for something like that, and that creates meaning. You know, the moment you stand for something which is for the larger society, right? Something bigger than you are, right? At that is when, so that is why, you know, you find them talking about an orphanage. or you know, creating schools.
Internally, you know it.
Yes,
you know that that's
exactly
where it is.
Yeah, but till those conversations are quelled, the other things like
exactly,
I need money.
Right. In fact, that is the thing which we started off with, right?
Yes.
You know, one in a crore might have the thought, but not many have that.
Yes.
More than anything else, courage.
Yes, yes.
I remember Anthony DeMello, he tells in one of his talks, you know, he says, he asks the audience, so do you want the ultimate bliss? This is, everybody kind of puts up their hands, says everybody wants ultimate bliss. So I tell you, I will guarantee you that ultimate bliss. Are you ready to tear up your degree certificate? He says, no, because one thing is you're not sure. The other thing is all of us are so insecure. We don't want to let go of what is surely in our hand, you know, or at least what you think is surely in your hand, right? So I think we'll start off from there with Swami saying that this thought of wanting to know what is the purpose of life is a good place to start with. Let's go to the next clip and see what Swami says further.
Kani, anekamandi janulu, jeevita paramarthamante eviti ante, కడుపు నిండుకు తిండి, కంటి నిండుకు నిద్ర, ఒంటి నిండుకు బట్ట, ఇంటి నిండుకు పిల్లలు, ఇవే జీవిత మన పరమావధి అనుకుంటాం.
బట్ వెన్ ఆస్క్డ్ వాట్ ఇస్ ద పర్పస్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్, మోస్ట్ పీపుల్ ఫీల్ ఇట్ ఇస్ హ్యావింగ్ ఇనఫ్ ఫుడ్ టు ఫిల్ ద స్టమక్, ఇనఫ్ స్లీప్ టు ఫిల్ ది ఐస్, ఇనఫ్ క్లోత్స్ టు కవర్ ద బాడీ, అండ్ ఇనఫ్ చిల్డ్రన్ టు ఫిల్ ద హౌస్.
కాదు కాదు,
నో నో,
ఈ కడుపు నిండుకు తిండి, కంటి నిండుకు నిద్ర, వంటి నిండుకు వస్త్రము, ఇంటి నిండుకు పిల్లలు, పశుపక్షి మృగాదులు కూడా ఉంటున్నాయి.
దిస్ నీడ్ ఫర్ ఫుడ్ టు ఫిల్ ద స్టమక్, స్లీప్ టు ఫిల్ ది ఐస్, క్లోత్స్ టు కవర్ ద బాడీ, అండ్ చిల్డ్రన్ టు ఫిల్ ద హౌస్ క్యాన్ బి ఫౌండ్ అమంగ్ అనిమల్స్, బర్డ్స్ అండ్ బీస్ట్ టూ.
మానవ జీవితం యొక్క పరమావధి ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఇస్ ద హైయెస్ట్ గోల్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమన్ లైఫ్?
కాదు, మానవుడు తిని ఊరికే కూర్చునేటువంటి స్వభావం కాదు.
నో, man's inherent nature is not merely to eat and stay put.
Tini tirugutadu,
he eats and roams around.
Tirigi vishayanni kanukuntadu,
going around he gathers information.
Yedi manchido danini abhiruddhi gavinchukuntadu,
he develops that which is good.
Abhiruddhi gavinchukunna manchini aacharistadu,
the goodness which he develops he follows.
ఆచరించిన మందిని మంచిది 10 మందికి అందిస్తాడు.
ద గుడ్ హీ ఫాలోస్ హీ దెన్ షేర్స్ విత్ 10 అదర్స్.
పరమావధి,
దిస్ ఇస్ ద ట్రూ గోల్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్.
మనం ఈ జగత్తునందు ప్రవేశించి,
వి ఎంటర్ దిస్ వరల్డ్,
చేప ఏ విధంగా జలములో సంచరించి ఆ జలమునందున్నటువంటి మాలిన్యాన్ని భుజించి జలమును పవిత్రము గావించుతున్నదో,
యాజ్ ద ఫిష్ మూవ్స్ అరౌండ్ ద వాటర్స్ కన్స్యూమింగ్ ద డర్ట్ అండ్ మేకింగ్ ద వాటర్ క్లీన్,
అదే విధంగానే విద్యార్థి ఈ సమాజంలో ప్రవేశించి,
సిమిలర్లీ ద స్టూడెంట్ మస్ట్ ఎంటర్ ద సొసైటీ,
సమాజం నందున్నటువంటి మాలిన్యాన్ని రూపుమాపి,
ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మ్ ద ఫిల్త్ ఇన్ ద సొసైటీ,
మహత్తరమైనటువంటి ఆదర్శాన్ని అభివృద్ధిపరచి,
ఫాస్టర్ ది ఐడియల్స్ దట్ ఆర్ ఇంపార్టెంట్,
అభివృద్ధిపరచిన ఆదర్శాన్ని అనుభవించి,
ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ది ఐడియలిజం దట్ హాస్ బీన్ ఫాస్టర్డ్,
అనుభవించిన ఆనందాన్ని 10 మందికి పంచాలి,
అండ్ షేర్ విత్ 10 అదర్స్ ద జాయ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్డ్.
ఇది ప్రధానమైనటువంటి పరమావధి.
దిస్ ఇస్ ద ప్రైమరీ గోల్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్.
దీనిని ప్రశ్నోపనిషత్తు వేసినటువంటి దీనికి సరైన జవాబు.
దిస్ ఇస్ ద బెస్ట్ ఆన్సర్ ఫర్ ద క్వశ్చన్ పోస్డ్ బై ద ప్రశ్నోపనిషద్.
నాయన, జీవితం అనేటువంటిది కేవలం ఏకాకి జీవితం కాదు.
చైల్డ్, లైఫ్ ఇస్ నాట్ టు బి లివ్డ్ ఇన్ ఐసోలేషన్.
ఇది ఒక సమాజంతో కూడినటువంటిది.
ఇట్ ఇస్ రిలేటెడ్ టు సొసైటీ.
ఇది వ్యక్తి జీవితం కాకుండా సమష్టి జీవితంగా ఉండాలి.
రాదర్ దాన్ అన్ ఇండివిజువల్ లివింగ్, ఇట్ మస్ట్ బి అ సోషల్ లివింగ్.
సమాజమే లేకపోతే వ్యక్తియే లేడు.
వితౌట్ ద సొసైటీ దెర్ ఇస్ నో ఇండివిజువల్.
వ్యక్తి యొక్క సుఖశాంతములు అన్ని కూడా సమాజంలో ఇమిడి ఉంటున్నవి.
ఆల్ ద హ్యాపీనెస్ అండ్ పీస్ ఆఫ్ అన్ ఇండివిజువల్ ఆర్ ఎంబెడెడ్ ఇన్ ద సొసైటీ.
కనుక సమాజం యొక్క క్షేమాన్ని మొట్టమొదట మీరు కోరండి.
సో ఫస్ట్ అండ్ ఫార్మోస్ట్ aspire for the welfare of the society.
Loka samasta sugino bhavantu, andaru sukhanga untundali.
May all in the world be happy. Everyone must be happy.
Appudu andari sukhamlone manasukum kudanu ividi untundali.
Our happiness too is embedded in the happiness of all.
Manasukum pratyekanga neeti paina vesina taila puttu vale pratyekanga undatam ledhu.
Our happiness is not isolated like a drop of oil on a leaf.
నీటి వలె బాలతో చేరిన బాలవలే మన జీవితము సమాజంతో లీనం కావాలి.
లైక్ వాటర్ దట్ ఇస్ మిక్స్డ్ ఇన్ వాటర్ అండ్ మిల్క్ దట్ ఇస్ మిక్స్డ్ ఇన్ మిల్క్ ఆర్ లైఫ్ మస్ట్ మర్జ్ ఇన్ టు దాట్ ఆఫ్ ద సొసైటీ.
ఈ సత్యాన్నే బ్రహ్మచారులంతా కూడా గుర్తించవలనని పిప్పిలాదుడు ఆ యొక్క శిష్యులకు బోధిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
Pipilada taught his students that it is this truth that all brahmacharis or celibates must recognize.
Kani.
But
ee manavattamulo
in this human life
kashtamulaku guri kavali,
difficulties must be undergone,
badalu sahinchali,
pain must be endured,
nindaku nishtharamulanu edurkovali,
censure and calumny must be faced.
అప్పుడే నిజమైనటువంటి సత్యం మనకు అర్థమవుతుంది.
దెన్ అలోన్ కెన్ వి అండర్స్టాండ్ ది అబ్సల్యూట్ ట్రూత్.
అప్పుడే ఉన్నత స్థాయిని కూడా మనం అందుకోగలము.
దెన్ అలోన్ కెన్ వి అటైన్ ది హైయెస్ట్ స్టేట్.
ఒక తోటమాలి
వన్ గార్డనర్
తెల్లవారి మొదలు రాత్రి వరకు కూడాను
ఫ్రమ్ డాన్ టు డస్క్
తోటను కాపాడే నిమిత్తమై
ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు సేఫ్ గార్డ్ ది గార్డెన్
చాలా దూరం నుంచి ఒక మట్టి పాత్రలో నీరు తీసుకుని వచ్చి ప్రతి మొక్కకు వేసి దాన్ని పోషిస్తూ వస్తున్నాడు.
హస్ బీన్ ఫెచింగ్ వాటర్ ఇన్ అ మడ్ పాట్ ఫ్రమ్ అ డిస్టెంట్ ప్లేస్ అండ్ వాటరింగ్ ఎవ్రీ సాప్లింగ్ అండ్ నర్చరింగ్ దెమ్.
ఈ విధంగా పోషిస్తూ పోషిస్తూ యజమానుని యొక్క మననలకు గురి అయ్యాడు.
ఫాస్టరింగ్ అండ్ నర్చరింగ్ ద గార్డెన్ దిస్ వే హీ ఎర్న్ ద లవ్ అండ్ అప్రిసియేషన్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ మాస్టర్.
అందుకున్నాడు ఈ యొక్క గౌరవాన్ని.
He earned this respect. One day, because of the disturbances at home, being dissatisfied, he kept the whistle down. And with disinterest, he started thinking of his life as being useless.
కానీ ఇది సరికాదని ఎంత ప్రయత్నించినప్పటికీ నిరాశ నిస్పృహకు తాను గురి అవుతూ వచ్చాడు.
However much he tried telling himself that to feel this way is wrong, he ended up feeling hopeless and dejected.
ఏమిటి నా జీవితము?
What is my life?
జీవితం అంతా కూడాను ఈ విధమైనటువంటి ఒక సేవా భాగ్యం నందే నేను అంకితం కావాలా?
All my life am I to be dedicated to such service alone?
నేను పుట్టినందుకు ఏమిటి?
వై హ్యావ్ ఐ టేకన్ బర్త్?
అనేక మంది సుఖశాంతులు అనుభవిస్తున్నారు.
మెనీ ఆర్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సింగ్ జాయ్ అండ్ పీస్.
నేను సుఖశాంతికి నోచుకోలేదా?
ఎమ్ ఐ నాట్ డిజర్వింగ్ ఆఫ్ సచ్ జాయ్ అండ్ పీస్?
నేనంత దరిద్రుడను.
హౌ పూర్ ఐ ఆమ్.
నేనంత పాపిని.
వాట్ ఎ సిన్నర్ ఐ ఆమ్
అని తనలో తాను చాలా నిందించుకుంటూ వచ్చాడు.
ఇన్ దిస్ మేనర్ హీ బిగాన్ క్రిటిసైజింగ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్.
ఈ నిందను పురస్కరించుకుని ఆ పాత్ర జవాబిస్తుందాదట.
హియరింగ్ దిస్ సెల్ఫ్ క్రిటిసిజం ఇట్ సీమ్స్ ద వెసల్ గేవ్ ఎ రిప్లై.
ఓ తోటమాలి,
ఓ గార్డనర్,
ఈ చిన్న అశాంతికే నీవింత నిస్పృహ చెందటం మంచిది కాదు.
ఇట్ ఇస్ నాట్ గుడ్ టు గెట్ డిప్రెస్డ్ ఆన్ అకౌంట్ ఆఫ్ సచ్ అ ట్రివియల్ డిస్టర్బెన్స్.
కష్టే ఫలి,
హార్డ్ వర్క్ అలోన్ యీల్డ్స్ రివార్డ్స్.
దీనికి నేనే ఆదర్శం.
I am an example for that.
నేను పూర్వము ఒక అందరి కాళ్లపైన అందరి కాళ్ల కింద తొక్కబడినటువంటి మట్టి.
Previously I was mud that was trampled upon by everyone's feet.
కానీ కుమ్మరవాడు నన్ను తీసుకొని వచ్చి
but the potter brought me
నీటితో కలిపి
mixed me with water
కాళ్లతో త్రొక్కి
crushed me with his legs
చక్రం వైపున వేసి తిప్పి
placed me on a wheel and spun me around
చెక్కతో కొట్టి
బీట్ విత్ ద స్టిక్
నన్ను ఒక పాత్రగా చేసి
మేడ్ మీ ఇన్ టు అ వెసల్
అగ్నిలో వేల్సి
రోస్టెడ్ మీ ఇన్ ఫైర్
నన్ను బాగా కాల్చి
బర్న్ట్ మీ థరలీ
కట్టగడపటికి అందరి మొటికాయలు కూడా నేను తింటూ వచ్చాను. ఇది సరైందే కాదా అని ప్రతి ఒక్కడు నన్ను కొట్టి తీసుకోవటమే.
అట్ ది ఎండ్ ఐ బిగాన్ రిసీవింగ్ బీటింగ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆల్. Everyone would tap on me to see if I was good or not and then take me.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి కష్టమును నేను అనుభవించటం చేతనే
it is because I have gone through such hardships.
ఈనాడు నేను మానవుని యొక్క తలపైన పోయి నిలుచున్నాను.
Today I am able to stand on the head of man.
ఈ కష్టములకే నేను సరైనటువంటి ఇది ఆదుకోలేకపోయినప్పుడు
if I were not prepared to face the difficulties If I had not faced all the troubles at all, I wouldn't have reached such a high position.
So that, dear listeners, was the next clip, and Swami ended with that beautiful story. But of course, before that, Swami made I think in many ways continuation of what we were just discussing.
Yeah.
Because Swami was talking about the purpose of life, and in a very, very simple way, you know, in a very generic way, more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
As we were saying, it so depends on your approach to life, and you know, you can't go and tell a person who's really striving for his family and trying to make ends meet
mm-hmm.
that the purpose of life is to, you know, say go beyond your body or give up body consciousness or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the way Swami has put it, I think it's applicable to everybody. The way, you know, Swami says that what does man do? You know, he of course feeds himself,
mm-hmm.
then he goes around, takes a good look at things around, decides what's good and bad,
mm-hmm.
then tries to pursue the good,
mm-hmm.
and you know, learn something in the process, gathers some experience in the process, and he shares it with the others, with the welfare of others in his mind. And that's the purpose of life.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
The desire to, as you were saying, that I to we, that always that desire to what has benefited me, can I make it benefit others?
For others, yes.
Right?
Yeah. Which, in fact, at the, you know, we were remarking right at the beginning of the discourse, Swami is speaking about in that couplet which he recites, Swami is speaking about paropakarartham idam shariram.
Mm,
mm. That this body is given, the purpose of this body is to serve others.
Right.
Swami is very clear about that.
Mm.
And he was mentioning that, you know, this is a very, very profound discourse, very abstract discourse about Prashnopanishad.
Right.
And very abstruse topic. And at the same time, Swami is beginning with something very realistic. And as you can see, this core of the discourse is this.
Right.
Swami is actually driving all the discussion about prana, shakti, was all completely, finally, mm-hmm. just for this. And it's very important to see, like, why that flow, you know. Like,
mm-hmm.
because, see, most of the time, whatever we caught up, our everyday concerns are about only about ourselves, no? Like, mm-hmm. you know, where am I with in relation to my workplace?
Mm-hmm.
What are my relationships with others, people around me, in family, in, you know, society? And the other things like financial security you were mm-hmm. talking about, and do I have enough power, do I have enough fame, am I admired enough? These are the everyday concerns that we try to address, as Swami says,
mm-hmm.
and that's the humdrum life, you know, the routine every day, and like it's like from cradle to grave, that's what is happening with each one of us, right? And so Swami abstracts us completely out of that situation by having us look at what are your core elements, like how did you come into being,
mm-hmm.
right? And in fact, if you have in the Keno Upanishad, we realize that prana is something very sacred, right? It's given such an exalted status,
right?
And Swami says that those are the building blocks. That's how you came into being, and at that moment, you know, everything else kind of fades into the background.
Mm-hmm.
You get present to really who you are truly. The way Swami holds you up is something mm-hmm. very divine, right? And that's why Swami, so the moment you do that, then you start now looking out, okay, you know, my concerns, all of these are very trivial and they're not going to satisfy who I truly am, right? So
mm-hmm.
then you start looking out, and Swami guides so beautifully. Swami says that your happiness lies in the welfare of the people around you.
Right.
You know, lifelong we try to make ourselves happy and we never mm-hmm. realize why that is never, that quest is never over.
Exactly.
Swami says the moment you start looking at the happiness of others, then that those files inside your head are closed.
Mm-hmm.
And now you truly feel satisfied.
In fact, when we were having that conversation with James Sinclair,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was talking about how he brings Swami's message into his business.
Mm.
And this is something pretty similar to what Swami has said. And, you know, typically he says it's so possible.
Mm.
You know, it's not rocket science. It's not something which you have to go out of your way to do. He says, you know, in my business, somebody comes and has a dealing with me.
Mm.
I ensure that this person leaves me enriched.
Right.
He says, I will do whatever it takes for him to do well.
Yeah.
And invariably I'll do well too. You know, it's very rarely somebody comes with the idea of, making use of me or trying to make his way hurting me. That's very rarely. Of course, there are such reverses in business, but they come and go. But most often, when you have this attitude that whoever is coming to me, I should make him do well, I should make her do well,
contribute to them,
because she's having, he or she is having a interaction with me, that person should benefit.
Yes.
And he said, I mean, he's one of the most successful businessmen in his field, and it certainly does work. And whether it works financially or not, I mean, if it's giving you that peace of mind, why not? I think that's the perfect way forward.
Yes, I think that's a very good insight that you have brought in, because I think even as like we are, speaking about this discourse, and I'm sure many listeners are, and each of us must right now be confronting that question, right? That what is the purpose of our life, right? And sitting where we are, you know, the kind of jobs that we are doing, like, is it possible to create a purpose for our lives in such a way that, you know, we are of welfare to society? And Swami says exactly that, you know, we are out there in society, and exactly where we are, the kind of jobs that we are doing, it is in fact an opportunity to serve society, right? If each one of us understands that it goes beyond what we normally understand as a profession or as a means for earning money, right? That is when even the work, the so-called routine work that we are doing, suddenly turns into something very beautiful. In fact, any work could become a calling, right? Like, even a teacher, right? If the job of a teacher is simply to complete the syllabus, make the students, you know, get through their examinations, well, fine. There's a certain, you know, you achieve your targets and a certain satisfaction. But I'm sure you wear out after a while. But if you can make a contribution to the student such that, you know, I think the greatest joy a student, a teacher derives is when a student comes back and says, you made a difference in my life. Not that you made me pass the examinations. You know, the teachers who caused a shift in a student, right?
Right.
Those are the people whose memories endure in the students' lives. No?
Right.
So, I'm pretty sure it's there even, you know, in, say, the world of finance, right? So, when would you get satisfaction in something like a cutthroat world like that is when you make it your mission to make sure you're making financial security available to so many people around you. You know, it's actually, if you look at very, very intelligent people, they still are not very clear about how to manage their money. And if you can give them that sense of security in that, you know, you do that job for them and they feel happy, that's your calling. Right? And, you know, it can happen anywhere. I remember a few days ago, as I was told of one of the canteen managers in our, in the ashram.
Okay.
And they were saying, you know, so at around 1:30, 1:45, he saw a couple of, somebody entering the ashram, obviously looking around. I mean, they just entered the ashram and they're looking for a place to eat. Okay, he sensed that that's what they're looking for. So he goes up to them and he tells them, like, you know, you're looking for a canteen. They said, yes, we asked around, but they said that all the canteens are closed. He says, no, don't worry. I'm the canteen manager and I'll open it for you. You can have lunch and you can go to your accommodation. So they said all right, and they had to maybe purchase some coupons or whatever it was. But by the time they came to the canteen, the door, you know, the sevadal at the door was not aware that the canteen manager had authorized them to enter. So he turned them away and they went, you know, they decided, okay, can't be helped, let's go and find our accommodation first. And they went away. And this canteen manager is waiting inside. He waits for 5 minutes and then he realizes that, you know, maybe the doors were locked. So he goes up to the sevadal who's manning the door. He asks them, where do you think they went? So he said, sir, I saw them go in the general direction of the north blocks.
Accommodation,
right? So he goes to each one of the north blocks and asks the sevadal there, did anybody, any new entrant come, there is a new family, have they sought accommodation? And none of them could recall, you know. So this is where, you know, perhaps you and I would have stopped, but this canteen manager went a step ahead. He went to the accommodation office and inquired with them, and they said that yes, a family just arrived and they are in one of the north blocks, right? So he goes back and he has lunch packed. And he asked the sevadal to go and deliver it in the room of that devotee who had just come, right? And the Sevadal related that when I knocked on the door opened and he says the words that came out of his mouth were like, the Swami has sent some food for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that lady, it seems they were coming for the first time to Prashanthi Nilayam.
Mm-hmm.
And that lady just sat there and broke down. She said that even in my mother's place,
mm-hmm.
if I go, you know, after the lunch session is over, I will not get this kind of treatment. Right? I was just so moved, you know, on hearing that story, because I just felt this goes even beyond going beyond the call of duty.
Right.
Right. There is something very extraordinary, very magical, and I think it only comes out of like being true to Swami's teaching that all we exist for is for the service of others around us.
Very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, you really know that it is such acts and, you know, such devotees who really stand out. I'm reminded of one of our senior devotees who's from Hyderabad.
Mm.
Of course, it's a little different from what you said. Apparently, when Swami was in Shivam during one of his visits, this person was one of the senior sevadals, so he used to walk with Swami and, you know, help Swami with the letters and things like that. So that day, before going out for darshan, Swami looks at this person and says, "Hey, I'll come to your home today. Okay, I had promised your wife that I'll come, so I'll come to your home." And this person looks at Swami and says, "Swami, why?" He says, "No, I'll come, I'll visit your house." And, you know, those days Swami used to visit devotees' house. No? He says, "Swami, what for? See, my wife is here. She's doing sevadal duty on the other side. I am here. There's nobody at home. What do you want to come home and do?" He said, "Thousands of devotees are sitting here.
Beautiful.
The time that you would like to spend in my house, spend it out here with the devotees. You know, they will feel so much more happier." Okay, and you know, that's where Swami, when he decides to give his grace, such acts will only, you know, make you more worthy of that receiving that grace. And apparently Swami goes out and Swami goes to the lady's side. He of course can't accompany Swami there, and Swami walks to his wife and Swami tells her that, "I'm coming to your house. You go home and keep things ready. Don't tell your husband. After I come there, we'll call him." You know, but this is really something which we've seen with Swami. And yes. Reminded you know, many times when Swami is coming during the big festivals, Shivratri, your birthday, there would be a lot of devotees who are made to sit outside the gate because of the crowd. And especially any of these seniors would come and tell Swami, "Swami, that we've made devotees sit there. It would be nice if Swami comes." Swami would be so happy that, you know, in the midst of all this, somebody is thinking of them and Swami, they're coming to Swami. You know, that always will have that response. And Swami will go out till the Rama statue and give darshan there. And I mean, as you're saying, that happiness which Swami got was what Swami was trying to, you know, inspire us to experience.
Yes. I think in that sense, out of His immense grace, Swami has created the Satya Sai Seva organizations.
Right.
You know, it's like a venue, an avenue for each one of us to explore that, you know, ability of ourselves to care for others. Right. It's an avenue. Like, I know, like, in city after city in India, we can join so many service activities which would give us so much satisfaction of having contributed. I remember in Chennai, we were able to do different kinds of service activities. It could range from, you know, being able to clean a community temple or doing what was called at that time as cataract seva. I don't know if it continues yet. But going into the different, you know, slums or poor locations and screening for patients who possibly had cataract, and then networking them to people, to hospitals where they would do free surgery for them.
Right.
And I can't, you know, there were cancer hospitals, the patients attending to them. Like, those were really golden moments where, and I can't think of that it would have happened by itself on its own, right? So that's a beautiful, I remember, yes, again, summers, right, manning the water, so-called drinking water camps.
Right.
You know, we would serve drinking water to, we would hold our camp near a bus stand. There would be cool water that is stored in pots, right, earthen pots. It would naturally be cool. And it used to be like, in a day, we would have served some 100, 200 people with water. Immense satisfaction. Unbelievable amount of satisfaction. And I'm pretty sure if, you know, Dr. Narasimhan, he has so many such stories of the amount of work that was done by their, you know, Sevadal group.
Right.
Yes.
Mm.
So in that way, we should be really grateful to Bhagwan that he has given us this opportunity in that sense, in any small way that we can, to serve society, and so therefore taste what it is like. Swami is giving us a taste of what he says when he says Paropakarartham Idam Shariram. Why he is guiding us in that direction.
In fact, it reminds me of that very famous interaction between Dr. Fani Banda and Swami. Apparently, when he asked Swami once, Swami, you've set up such a huge organization and there are so many things that this organization does. What is the purpose of this organization? You know, what does Swami want? What does Swami want to achieve through this organization? And Swami very casually remarked, nothing. There's nothing to achieve through this. And he was surprised because he said, you know, something which is so global, which has so much, reach, and there is so much to which can be done with an organization so large as this. So he thought that Swami must be having some kind of a master plan. So Swami said nothing. So he was quite startled by it, and then Swami explained. He said, it's only to give you an opportunity. It's only to give each one who is going to participate in the activities the opportunity to purify themselves. You know, that's all it is. As you know, in that clip which we played, Swami saying that, find happiness. You put your own effort and find it. And having found that happiness, find ways of sharing it with others. So it could be, as you're saying, financial security. It could be even the joy of service. Are you able to share that with others? Apart from just serving others, are you able to share the joy of service with others? And of course, the next part of the discourse, Swami shifted gear towards willfully accepting challenges and going through difficulties, which is again a very important aspect of a spiritual journey. Probably we'll have to leave it for next week, because we can then play the remaining part of the discourse too, where Swami continues about this very concept. So thank you, Hari, and thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. We offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. Do join us again next week at 7:30 for Shravanam Maranam Nididhyasanam again. In a short while from now, you'll have Brother Bishu joining you for the last segment of today, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you for joining us, and stay tuned for the next program too. Jai Sai Ram.